Blog Talk Radio.
The All About You show is brought to you in part by Vera Heart Coaching and Mindscape, the art of transformation.
Well, hello. Welcome to the Thursday edition of the All About You show. Today is Thursday. I can't believe it's December 10th already. And my special guest this evening is author and artist Kimberly Nichols. Kimberly, welcome to the All About You show. I'm so excited to have you on tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Yes. You are you're a conceptual artist, a writer, and a social anthropologist who explores issues of the individual's contemporary universal identity through spirituality, myth, psychology, and geography, and culture to inform what work that expresses the myriad of perspectives and humanity and our inherent existential connections. Now, that's a mouthful. How did
that? It certainly
that?
Is.
Yes, and how, I mean, it's beautifully stated. You're also the author of a book, a literary short stories, Mad Anatomy, which I need to download to my Nook. And you are currently working on a memoir about the mother wound, family secrets, and the damage in silence. And so let's start with the mouthful, conceptual artist, writer, social anthropologist. Let's start with that. How did all of that come into being?
Sure. Well, I think, I mean, ever since I was a very little girl, I just remember loving to observe the world around me and most specifically the humans in it and just really trying to figure out what relationships were. I was always fascinated with the way that people interacted with each other, and I, you know, always kind of felt like I was this watcher and kind of felt like I was sort of in my own place behind a veil and, you know, just really trying to figure out what the purpose of being here was. I think I always felt very connected to everybody. And from a very early age, as we do growing up, felt that boundaries were kind of a taught and essential thing that the adults in our lives and the teachers in our lives and the, you know, people in our lives were trying to enforce. And I, on the other hand, always felt quite free across my boundaries and as if I wanted to connect with other people. So I think in the beginning, it was more of a confusion in me that I didn't understand why everyone just didn't talk to each other on the street or, you know, why we'd stand in the grocery store line with people in front of us and not look at them or say hello. And I think that made me feel very strange from a very early age. And that kind of is where the social anthropology comes in. I just kind of became fascinated with trying to figure out how to create work, both art and writing, that would somehow get across those boundaries and make people also feel that inherent relationship I already felt with them.
Right. That's beautiful. I see. I'll talk to anybody, you know, and I find that people will just give me their standing in a line in a grocery store. All you have to do is say hello, and they just start talking, you know. And I think that it's a beautiful thing to acknowledge the other people that you interact with on a daily basis, and. And I love that this is the work that you're doing with your writing and with your art as well. And, you know, I was telling you briefly right before we started, right before the program started, your work, your artwork is utterly amazing. It truthfully is. Now, do you paint that? These are your paintings?
I do some... I do so many different things. I always say, I think Sally Mann had a really interesting quote once when she was asked, you know, what do you do? And she said, I am an artist that uses the camera as my medium. And I've always told people that I'm an artist that uses life as my medium, and then whatever tool I come up with to explain whatever idea I have in my head, whether it's writing a book or doing a series of paintings or staging a photo shoot, or to now I'm working a lot with cardboard, wood, materials, threads, sewing. It just depends. It depends what concept I have, and the material and the medium that I use is always integrally connected with the end concept. So it's all a piece of the process.
Right. Yeah, and it's beautiful, the work. Now, I have some images scrolling across the marquee for anybody listening online, and there are several images of Kimberly's work, and it truthfully is just stunning. Now, there's one, was it dancing? I'm trying to think of the name of the picture, and isn't that terrible? That's just terrible. I can't click a link. That's just wrong on so many levels that I can't even click a link in my own thing. But it one of these pictures, I believe, is looks like hula hoops. Well, that's not going to work if I'm getting back feet either, so I apologize for that. Are you dancing? What are you dancing with? Let me find that picture. Because it looked like I wanted to be there and join in the fun. It was like, okay, so you have the one with, it looks like an 80s day, Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's the Let's Get Physical album, right? And,
that
and
was,
based
that
on
was,
the outfits
yeah.
and the hair, I'm going to guess. It must have been 80s day at your studio. That's awesome.
That and actually, that's an interesting story. That was not at my studio. That was at an abandoned mall that I had spent my 80s hanging around with, ditching school at, pretending I was a little girl from France with some friends of mine and our fake French accents. And that mall, this piece that I did was a piece on memory. And how does memory change if you revisit the location where the memories were? And how does the state of the location, whether it's the same or different, affect your memory? So it was this really interesting exploration for me. The mall was actually abandoned at this time. I went back as an adult. The mall was abandoned. It actually was this political hotbed in the middle of Palm Springs that was a building that the people of the town were constantly in battles with, whether they were going to tear it down or keep it up or refinish it for something else. But basically it stood in the center of the thriving town of Palm Springs, abandoned for about 20 years. And nobody knew that inside it was falling apart and it had trees growing up through the cracks and the stores and the glass were smashed. And what I was so fascinated with was that I had grown up there in the 80s, and that was my hangout, and now it was just this hulking eyesore. So I took my muses, which during that time I was doing a lot of photography, so I had a group of friends that I always used as my models, and yes, we dressed them up in 80s clothes, and we snuck into that mall on a very rainy day, and we shot those photos. And we were shocked at the decay in there, and it was really an interesting piece on memory because I came to find out that, you know, memory is it deteriorates and it does not stay, and it's ghost-like and it's not factual, and neither are the places that we revisit. So that was a really, really profound piece that I loved doing, and the actual images that I shot ended up being the pieces that I showed for the art.
Right. No, that... And you're right, memory is, you know, it does fade. And then when we're older, we add in different pieces, you know, to make it more real or maybe more lifelike. But that's so sad that mall sat abandoned for 20 years. especially in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I know, and it actually just got demolished. It's now in the process of being gone just now this year. So yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, and how old is this picture?
That picture, oh gosh, I think I took that about 5 years ago. No, more than that, about 8 years ago. Yeah.
Wow. Wow, wow. No, it just, when you look at it, and here I thought you had just, you know, rearranged some stuff like in your studio, because that's what it looks like from behind with the glasswork that's, I don't know if it's painted or, you know, got some sort of film covering on it, but it looks like it actually could be a studio. And I was thinking you have the coolest studio, but you actually did, because, you know, it is an amazing, amazing piece. And you seem to have captured the essence of both time and memory in a great shot. That's a great piece. Where is that hanging now?
I actually have one of the pieces here with me in my current studio, and then the other one sold to a collector in the desert, so I have no idea where that is. But I just thought you'd be interested to know the graphics that you are calling glasswork or, you know, images in the back. That's actually what used to be the front door. That actually, right outside of that, is Palm Canyon Drive, which is the main strip downtown Palm Springs. So those coverings on the window were like these vinyl graphics of tennis players and the resort lifestyle people, and it was like showing, you know, downtown Palm Springs and the tourists that, you know, this is our luxurious Palm Springs lifestyle, right behind this like total decay that nobody knew about, you know. So it was really cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. Now, there's another picture that I really love so much. It looks like graffiti everywhere. With looks like a man and a woman. Yeah, there's like three pieces, and it looks like graffiti. There looks like a man and a woman spray painted on a wall holding hands. And then one, it looks like it's like in a, like on the, like a commercial property rooftop vent system. And another one looks like it belongs in, you know, a cave somewhere in, you know, in a tomb somewhere in Egypt. So, you know, like a cave painting. Yeah.
Okay. So that series was called Shells. And, that was something that I had a collaborator, an amazing artist named Ryan Campbell, who is a dear friend of mine, and we collaborated on this series for about a year. And what we would do is we would go to abandoned places in the middle of the desert, or the girl who's outlined in pink on the sand, that was taken at the Salton Sea. And our idea was to get people to think about the traces you leave behind, that to be mindful of the fact that everywhere you go and everything you do leaves an imprint. So it makes a difference. So even if you're out in the middle of nowhere, you still were there. You still have an impact on your surroundings. And so I would physically lay down or stand up, or those women figures are me, and he would trace me with spray paint, and then he would lie down or stand and pose, and I would trace him with spray paint, and we would do these narratives of this man and woman all across the outdoor world, mostly in the high desert and low desert and Salton Sea and Joshua Tree area. So we did that for a couple of years.
That's a phenomenal series. And the pink lady outlined in the sand, right? Is that a smaller graphic of, or is that, are you actually?
No,
life
that's life
that,
size.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's life size.
Just, that's amazing, because it, you know, the picture, the image, you know, it's hard to tell. Absolutely hard to tell.
Sure.
And then I love this piece with the woman looks like old time. I can't get the year in my mind that I want, but like Charlie Chaplin era. Yeah, boudoir photo.
Yes, absolutely. That was also a collaboration with another wonderful artist named Sharam Farshadfar, who he is an amazing photographer, and we really wanted to explore. I'm very into exploring the shadow side of archetypes in our society, and specifically we were looking into fairy tales and all those stories that, you know, we tell kids when they're young, but if you really look into them, they're kind of morbid and scary and
they are
kind of macabre. And we were, you know, we were thinking of things like Sleeping Beauty, which is the information in that photo that we've transformed into kind of like an archaic Sleeping Beauty. But yeah, that was what that series was all about, was kind of going under those archetypes and exploring the darkness in them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is what I really like about this picture and this model is the picture in and of itself is beautiful, and the woman is beautiful, and it reminds me of, you know, a time when you weren't subjugated by what size you were, you know, and actually the bigger the better,
yeah.
You know, and it's just, it really is, it's a stunning, stunning piece, and and the archetype, you know, there's Grimm's fairy tales, are truly very grim, you know, and the ones that, you know, we grew up hearing from our parents or telling to our kids, you know, we were in Russia a few years ago, and I picked up a Russian Grimm fairy tale, and to bring it back to my now 12-year-old, and I just picked it up. I didn't look at it. You know, I'm just like, oh, this will be fun. And then, because I love the artwork on the cover. And then on the plane trip back, I'm reading these stories. I'm like, I don't think I'm necessarily going to read these to him. You can read them when he's older, because they were pretty, pretty dark. And I was like, oh, my, these are like the original tales, you know. And so, but your love, I love your eye, and the way that you capture like essence of everything, and all of these pictures, you know, sometimes you look at art and you're like, oh, that's a pretty picture, or I don't like that, you know, but it's a rare artist who can cause you to think, what is the message with this piece right here, you know, and there's the one, it looks like the waves are crashing in the background, and then there's a almost like an opening, maybe there's sheets hanging down. It reminds
yes.
me of like the like a cabana almost in front of
yes.
a photo, right?
Right. So that, well, just a side note, because I'm not sure you realize this, but the woman in the Sleeping Beauty photo is me.
You're a beautiful
that
woman.
Thank you. But I just wanted, you know, that was part of it, was delving into the shadow for myself. So I thought that was important for you to know. But going on into the altar piece is what you're describing. So that piece was actually an installation for Day of the Dead in a museum. So that piece was called Where, and it was basically a video I had shot of this amazing morning at the beach and the waves rolling in, and you know, the ocean, I'm a total Pisces, and the ocean is my Valium, and one morning I went down by the sea and took this picture of these rolling waves and ended up using that as a projection on a wall in this huge white altarpiece for Day of the Dead, and I called it Where, and I had, I can't remember what song it was, but it was a Billie Holiday song playing, And mm-hmm. people would walk by and see this piece, and they would be asked to sit down on a white bench and write in a white book and look at this with the waves coming in and think about loss and somebody or something, or whether it was, you know, a person or a trait within them that they had lost, that they had thrown out to sea, or something that they might want to throw out to sea. So these people would come and sit down and be enveloped in that scene, and then they would write in this book. And it was really beautiful. That installation was up for about a week around the Day of the Dead period, and there was actually a class that came into the museum of adults that took like a origami class and made like these, mm-hmm. you know, Japanese constructs, and they ended up falling in love with my installation and putting all of the origami things that they had made into the piece and around the piece. So I actually took the origami. It was gorgeous. I took the book and I took the writings that everybody had written down, and I made a book out of that as well.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I see the origami at the very bottom. And I'm glad to know that's a table, because I was thinking it was like an old washing sink. So, and I can clearly see there's a book on top of it. But when I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, okay, so this is the way we're doing the laundry, you know, that which would be all right too. But I mean, well, you know, but I think when people, you know, just not knowing that this was a table. I mean, I studied this picture for a while, and I was trying to understand what the message is. I'm a water lover, and I love to be, you know, sit and listen to just the waves crash onto the shore. That to me is like the most beautiful music there is. And so that's really kind of why I fell in love with this specific piece. And I'm wondering, all right, so what is that? Is that maybe a diving board? You know, is it like a 3D thing, you know, to dive into the waves? Or, you know, it's very, very beautiful. And I think that you are an amazing, amazing talent. Now, what museum did this piece appear in?
That was in the Palm Springs Art Museum.
In Palm Springs. All right. And, yes, and the next one, how true is that? We are all in this together, you know, your next piece.
Absolutely.
That's on the marquee.
Yes, that piece, you'll see that there's actually, there's quite a few pieces there. I had a gentleman friend who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. He was an incredible artist, and this was a collaboration of ours. And he just basically wanted to put my face on all of these iconic images, or images that were in our news feeds or our media, iconic things like from famous paintings to scenes of war in other countries to, I think, you know, he did one of me as Joan of Arc. But basically the idea behind this, and this piece actually was really interesting. We showed this in a gallery, and I was literally standing in a room that had all these pieces surrounding me, and it's all my face. So it was a little unnerving. But the interesting thing was, you know, it was kind of a test. It was kind of a social test, because the intention we had behind it was to make everybody realize that they could be in any of these scenes. They could have lived in any of these times. They could be experiencing any of these circumstances. And to, again, going back to my thing about, you know, being inspired to try to get humans to actually connect and realize that we're all one, that was our intention. But what happened was a lot of people bristled at this piece because they saw my face on the Madonna, or, you know, on a Native American feather costume as a tribal dancer, or as a poor woman with a veil in war-torn Syria, or, you know, they saw me putting myself in these instances, and they kind of had this weird projective ego reaction to it, like,
really?
Who do I think I am? You know, who do I think I am to, you know, put my face on all of these things? Or, you know, that's kind of a vain thing to do, Kimberly. And then I would end up talking
wow.
to them and explaining
Talk
and
about
explaining
your
the piece to them. Oh, it was crazy. I actually ended up enjoying the fact that it did that, because it made myself and these other people actually do the thing that I say that I hope to do the most, which was connect. And it allowed us to dialogue, and it allowed us to talk about ego and, you know, all of these things. And, you know, it was around the time when, you know, Facebook had been around for a couple of years, but now it was just like the thing that was in everyone's lives constantly. And so,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're constantly being fed images. We're constantly seeing, you know, other people's lives, and we're constantly seeing all this stuff. But just because we see it all of the time, it didn't make everything suddenly transparent and close. It almost made things farther away, because it's like just disassociation now. You know, you see all these things so that they lose their meaning. It's just so diffuse. And
right.
we felt like that's what the news had already done that years before Facebook. So we were really trying to get that message across. And that was one of the more interesting experiences I had with my artwork. You know, it was
right.
we actually caused some controversy with that one.
Well, yeah, I can imagine, because number one, we live in such a fear-based society, first off, and an ego-driven
right.
reality, secondly. And when we stand there and, you know, and I'm, you know, super happy that it opened up dialogue, but I probably would have ran and hid, I think, you know, because it, you know, art is subjective to begin with. And,
right.
And what they took away from it, I think, actually speaks more to the subject matter than to you, I would think, because I think in the marquee there's also a one with several different of those pictures from, you know, when you're in the Joan of Arc costume, and you know, the woman like with the white collar on, you know, from, you know, like a poor village or whatever. And when you look at that, and then you look at this other one, because they were separately added. So when I was looking at them, I'm like, I thought it was the coolest thing, you know, one of the coolest things as far as art goes. And so when I look at it, just so I understand, so when I'm looking at the piece that you sent me, was it, is that just like something that you did to put them all into a specific picture? Or is that how it was at the exhibit?
Oh, okay. So all of those that you see are all separate pieces. There's five images, and they were all separate pieces, very large pieces.
Got it. All right. Yeah. So that when you're looking at it, like on your website, you know, they're just put together, you know, the way that
yeah.
they are,
yeah.
and even that is gorgeous, you know. And then you're also an author.
Yes.
And let's,
yeah.
Mad Anatomy, right?
Yes.
Let's talk about Mad Anatomy, shall we?
Well, that was my first book of short stories that I had published. That was in 2003. And that basically, I was absolutely, I'm a psychology buff. I'm so interested in why people do the things they do, and why people
mm-hmm.
turn out the way they do, or, you know, find themselves in circumstances they find themselves in. So from the time I was about 15 until I wrote that book when I was 17, although it did not get published until I was, I believe I was 26. But that book was basically me going through life and hearing a snippet of conversation that I did not understand how somebody could be saying that thing, or accidentally seeing a interaction between two people and kind of extrapolating from that, you know, huh, that's so interesting. I wonder what's the story behind that. And mm-hmm. also kind of working with the idea of mad anatomy insofar as the heart. So what are some of the things that the heart makes us do that, mm-hmm. you know, the brain that would certainly not be occurring if the brain was in charge. So basically,
right.
based on all of that, I just wrote these stories about people in very kind of severe and subversive or dangerous or chronic or ill, just very intense life situations and,
mm-hmm.
you know, stuck deep in the middle of them and how they were reacting to them, basically. So, I mean, there's
wow.
a story in there about a woman whose husband is making her, you know, get into swinging. There's a story in there about a woman on her last night dying of cancer. There's a story in there about a woman who learns her daughter has leukemia. They're all very intense psychological situations and just throwing
mm-hmm.
people right into the snapshot of what's going on.
Right. And how did that affect you with, 'cause you wrote it when you were younger, and how did that affect you as a child as far as, you know, life and death and the gruesome details of that go along with all of that?
Well, you know, when I was that age, I was my work was very dark. I was not yet really on this healing path that occurred in my early 20s that kind of changed my entire life and transformed
mm-hmm.
me into who I am now.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still really reacting to the world from a darker place. And so I was very attracted to darker topics like death and, you know, sexuality and the shadow side and, you know, screwed up relationships and, you know, things like that. And I think art throughout my whole life, whether it was art or writing, has always been kind of a cathartic way that I process what I'm going through, and it kind of acts as my therapy. And so I think that book was really kind of this late teenage girl trying to self-individuate in a world away from the past and the childhood that had kind of created her, and to kind of look at all of that and observe all of that. So a lot of the themes in that book were kind of like things I was confused about in life or that were presenting themselves to me as things that I could choose to go toward or against. And it was really kind of that moment I look back on and say, I mean, when people who know me now read that book, you know, they'll say, wow, you know, that's a little dark, you know? And it's like, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think that book was created to help me process the darkness out, you know?
Yeah, well, that's good. But it was like the stepping stone to greater things to come.
Absolutely. And I believe everything
right.
is that for sure. Yeah.
Right. Now you have this just came out, the poetry, Five Girls, We, and the New Skin Auction. Is that it says 2015, so I'm gonna guess relatively new.
Yes. That was just published in a magazine called The Good, the True, and the Beautiful.
Hmm. All right. Oh, is that like an e-zine?
No, it's actually a print, a physical
oh.
thing.
Nice. Very nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And then you also do a lot of on 100 proof bordello. Now, naked in front of strangers, and what is that about?
Yes. That's just my blog. That's just kind of a place where I like to trance out the themes I'm kind of obsessing over at the moment. And I have this, the 100 Proof Bordello is kind of this project that I have been doing for 20 years, and it takes many incarnations, but basically I love the idea, and I may actually do this as a performance piece someday, but I'm very interested in human sexuality and relationships and the way that people navigate those seas, considering we all come from a million different makeups and influences and, you know, traumas and neuroses and childhoods and, you know, experiences. And it always amazes me that two people can actually have a healthy, intimate relationship considering all of that. So I'm really interested in, like, desire and, you know, what makes people attracted to each other and what kind of, you know, what kind of how people communicate their desire and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of started the blog as a way to just, you know, work through those issues and kind of start to take notes on something for, you know, the future that I want to actually write or do a study on. But basically the 100 Proof Bordello concept originated because I've always thought that I think that as human beings we are a little bit, I don't know if it's misled or warped, or I think desire is so, it can be so externally based rather than internally based. I think it's very media fed, it's very idealized, and I think that 100 Proof Bordello to me is like the idea that if say a man or a woman walked into my bordello, if I were a madam, I would sit them down and I would give them the MMPPS, I can't remember what it's called, but it's that psychological test that's used clinically that has about 500 questions. And when a person answers the questions, the psychologist now says, okay, I understand this, this, and this about you. So I want someone to come into my bordello and take that test. And then I want to analyze those results. And then I want them to fully trust me and let me give them, put them in a room and give them the experience of their life the way I see that it would fit their psychological profile, rather than the way that they come in thinking, I have this type, or this is what turns me on. So they would go in fully trusting, they'd have to fully trust, and they would have this experience, and it would be the best thing of their lives, and it would make them realize that true desire, true connection, true interest is born inside of us and not outside
right.
of us. And it's not fed to us.
Right.
So that's kind of
right.
Those are kind of the concepts I'm trying to prance out and play with and explore on that blog.
That's awesome. That really is. I mean,
yeah.
That is, I'm, you know, never really thought of it quite in that way before, you know, with, you know, as far as human sexuality and desires and, you know, where they're born from. And what have you found in your, in seeking answers to those questions?
Well, I found some really interesting things. I mean, I've definitely discovered that I don't think I was giving men in particular as much credit as they deserve for being open to so many different kinds of attraction. I think that we pigeonhole men a lot as these idealizing beings, but I have found in my conversations with men that that's exactly probably not altogether true, that the media and our advertising industry is the thing that's created those myths that we continue to perpetuate as well. So it's almost like in many cases, men are as innocent bystanders as we are. So I found that out, which was quite interesting. And then, you know, it's a fluid, malleable thing though. But then also, I like listening to stories of men or women and what they were first turned on by as children. And, you know, I love hearing those stories because they are so pure and so innocent and so primal. It's like one man told me about, you know, seeing his beautiful female teacher. He came in from a lunch break to get something he had left in the room, and she was taking off her high heels and her socks because she was, you know, taking a break while the kids were out at lunch, and he found that incredibly erotic. Or, you know, finding out, listening to the Dave Matthews Band song Crash, when he talks about, you know, hike up your skirt a little more and show the world to me, just like the way that people in the young ages first, you know, felt or experienced desire, and how
sure.
beautiful and innocent and glorious that is, and how,
right.
you know, that I love it. So I'm finding a whole new appreciation, I guess, of that innocence within myself. You know, it's like, it's interesting. It's been really mind-opening.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be this whole concept would be a great thing to take to, like, middle school kids.
Yeah, totally.
I do. I think it would be a beautiful thing for, because that's that awkward, you know, gawky age, and when girls actually start really thinking that they're not good enough, and boys start thinking that they're not good enough, and or they're not the most popular, or, you know, they're the dorkiest, or whatever it is, the thoughts that are running through the adolescent mind as they try and juggle all of the hormones that are going through them as well. And I think some of them come out so lost as adults because parents went through the same thing but never quite overcame it, so didn't really know how to help their children adjust to what they were thinking and feeling, you know. And I think that this would be a beautiful thing to talk to middle school kids, or, you know, maybe even young high school, you know, like 9th, 10th grade, you know. But
yeah.
There are so many girls that are feeling less than, like they don't measure up, you know. And it's the old saying, you know, if you have long hair, you want short. If you have curly, you want straight. If you have straight, you want curly. If you have dark hair, you want light hair. You know, if you're short, you want to be tall. I mean, we think that we're not measuring up to somebody else's standard of perfection, but yet not understanding it's our standard of perfection of ourselves, and accepting ourselves as perfect as we are is what we need to own up to, and you know, and just truly fall in love with yourself at such an early age. And I think it would mean down the road 10 years, you know, a better, more mature, well-rounded adult who didn't have to go through, you know, that thinking, you know, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, we think that we're all alone. I mean, I was listening to you talk when we first started the conversation. I'm like, oh my God, you're like my twin, you know, sitting and watching people and, you know, wondering why people don't talk to one another. And, you know, and that's really nice. And I think, you know, that this is where it has led you now as an adult. It would be a beautiful gift to maybe even do a book for kids, you know, with, you know, they're not alone in their thinking, and they are really just, you know, I'm catching a cold or in the middle of one, that they really just relax and learn to love themselves first.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's such a beautiful idea. I know that, you know, I have a daughter. She's 25 now. And, you know, I really tried when she was growing up to kind of go back into a mentality of, you know, the ancient goddess religion. I mean, I know the word goddess is thrown around so much these days that it's been completely bastardized. But what I mean is, you know, when the ancient tribes where the women, when the young girl would begin to menstruate, they would have this wild, glorious party for her and celebrate her blood and celebrate her womanhood. And, you know, I when my daughter, you know, first got her period, you know, I baked her a chocolate cake and I put rose petals on her bed and we had this beautiful night in honor of her, and I made her raspberry tea, and it was like this beautiful night. And you know,
I
think that we miss out today. We miss out on. I don't know what it is. I know my mother's generation, the generation of the 50s. You know, they were people who didn't talk a lot about things, and they were people who, you know, you just kept things about yourself inside. But I know that my generation, I mean, the minute a kid starts to feel sexual or beautiful or what have you, I mean, from the moment they pop out of the womb, I mean, they're pretty free, beautiful, present-minded beings. And there is
right.
these points in life where, whether it's the teacher or the parent or what have you, comes in and, you know, stultifies. It's like, shame,
yeah.
Shame on you for feeling sexual. Shame on you for, you know, coloring out of the lines, you know. So you're taught, you know, that you just need to kind of repress and stuff and quiet all of these natural and primal beautiful things about yourself. And then you're fed these visions of, but these are all okay to like, and this is what you're expected to do and respond to. And it's this weird, like, training ground of, like, neurosis, you know?
Exactly. It is. And it's a breeding ground for neurosis, actually. That reminds
exactly.
me of a book a friend of mine has. She found it in a old bookstore somewhere, and it's a book of vitology. And in there, it showed pictures of the type of woman that the man was supposed to marry, and it was like my grandmother. She was like a sour faced. My mom's mom, rest her soul, was this sour faced, you know, Pennsylvania Dutch woman, right? And that's the woman you're supposed to marry. And then they had a drawing of what they called an quote fun girl, end quote, you know, and you need to just stay away from them. And then the things that they would actually institutionalize you for as a child, if you were caught masturbating, if a boy was caught masturbating, or girl, but this was mostly boys that were caught masturbating as when they were first becoming aware of, you know, their sexuality, they would lock them away in mental institutions. Honest to God.
Right. And put,
going, wow.
Totally. And the thing that strikes me the most about what you just said is the fact that someone you're supposed to stay away from is the person that is fun, you know?
Right.
It's like this weird, you know, it's this weird switch, you know, even in our lexicon. It's just so bizarre. Yeah.
Right. Right, right. And I think kids now are more confused than ever, you know, and and there are those that know exactly who they are, and I champion them, and there's those that aren't quite yet sure, and I champion them, and then there are those that are, you know, little clueless balls of love, and you champion them as well, you know, but
absolutely.
Like with my youngest, that's what we were having a similar conversation with regard to. He said I made him. What did he say? That I made him angry or something? And I said, really, I don't have that kind of power over you. I can't make you do anything. So I'm not inside your
right.
head. You know. It's how you view what I'm saying, and that has to do with your emotional well-being. So, you know, so
exactly.
we got into a 15-minute conversation before he went off to school this morning, and he kept saying, "Don't shrink my head, Mom, don't shrink my head." So I'm like, "I'm not. We're just having a conversation here, Squirt." You know,
that's
but
hilarious.
It never ceases to amaze me what today's youth, you know. I was born in the 60s, and there was so much going on, you know, that, like my husband, for example, who's 5 years older, he has more memories of the 60s because he was born in the 50s, so, than I do, but I do clearly remember the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, and I'm an 80s girl in my heart, so, you know, that was like, to me, they say the 90s is the best decade. I'm like, who said that? You didn't ask me.
Oh, please.
Me,
no, there's no
you
way.
Know? Right, exactly. You know, and I mean, people became stars because they ran around and sang in a mall, for goodness gracious, you know. And, right? And, you know,
yeah.
And that was the thing. You know, you didn't have like American Idol and, you know, being berated on national television. And, you know, things that, and television has changed so much, you know, and
yeah.
It's so much more adult-driven during times when kids would be watching, you know,
right.
And, you know, and I'll never forget my son when he was 3 years old, he had seen a commercial about something about fat-burning fuel, and he was, you know, real thin, and he's like, "Well, I need to look like that to be good looking."
Right.
I said, "No, right. You're already good looking. You know, you just look like you look. You know." And
exactly.
I said, "Everybody is different. You know how boring if everybody looked the
totally.
Same. You know." But he's 3 years old, and he's already thinking that he's not. He doesn't measure up to some photoshopped. You know. Photo of a guy. I'm just like, whoa.
Well, it's funny. I always talk with my friends and we joke that, you know, the divine, which is kind of what I call, I guess, what people think of as God.
Mm-hmm.
The divine, and I call her a she, the divine
mm-hmm.
has a very wicked sense of humor. And, you know, she gives us these young and burgeoning bodies full of life, and we do not appreciate them while we have them. And then by the time we learn that skin and body and ego is meaningless and we're ready to say, forget all that, I'm ready to actually go enjoy life now because I've learned that all of that is meaningless, we're too old. And so,
yes.
You know, I laugh. I say, well, you know, and you know, why is the divine so cruel? Well, you know, eternity is a long frickin' time. She has to amuse herself somehow, you know?
Exactly. That's how we got the platypus.
Yeah.
You know,
for
but
sure.
You're absolutely right. You know, it's this thing that we don't realize. And that's why I think what you're doing would be beautiful for children, to help them realize that everything is an inside job, you know, happiness
yeah,
is
for
an inside
sure.
job, you know, everything is all about your choices, how you are responding. There's nobody in your head, you know, telling you what to think or say or, you know, about, I mean, how you react is how you react, not
yeah,
the other way around.
Definitely.
So.
Totally. I think that, you know, now I'm 42 years old now, and I've done, you know, a lot of work, and I've been thinking a lot lately about, you know, what kind of voice do I actually want to put in the world going forward, you know, and what are the things that matter, and you know, I don't have, you know, hundreds of years left, so I want to make sure I make every moment count and my words meaningful. And so, you know, that is a big part of my trajectory going forward, is talking about those things, in whether it's
mm-hmm.
you know, through essays or the written word, or some, I'm hopefully going to be getting into some performance pieces that I can actually interact with people, you know, in the present and actually have these kind of dialogues and interchanges with them, because I really do feel like, you know, that's important going forward. I mean, I don't think that we make these vast changes so much on a world stage as we do on this like micro person to person stage, you know?
Right, right. And it just takes one, and to help one person.
Absolutely.
And then they pass it along, and you know, and I think that's a beautiful thing about the work that you do, not only with your writing, but with your amazing photos. We have about 5 minutes left. Websites. How can people see your work?
My website is www.KimberlyNicholsStudio.com, and I will spell that out. It's KimberlyNicholsStudio.com.
Perfect. And then there's also the 100 Proof Bordello.
Yes,
right?
Is that your
blog?
That's the blog, and that's just 100proofbordello.com.
And if people wanted to follow you on Twitter?
On Twitter, I am at LITGFOA. And that actually stands for Life is the Greatest Form of Art.
Ah, awesome. That is really good. See how creative you are? Yeah, no, this
Thank
is,
you.
Yeah, very creative. And I'm so glad that we got the opportunity to speak and find out more about you and your work. And I cannot tell you enough how much I love your work. The art is just blows my mind, you know. And on your website, the very first thing that people will see is the short film with Adam
yes.
Haynes called Constellation.
Yeah,
and
that's actually a short story of mine put to film.
Oh, awesome. And how long is it? I think it tells you right there.
Oh, it's short.
It?
It's about 5 minutes. Yeah, it's pretty
yeah.
short. 5 minutes.
Yeah. That should, you know, and so there's links to your bio, your contact, where you're performing, you're writing your early work, and then also there's also a link to 100 Proof Bordello, which I thought,
correct.
You know, was wine. I'm like, ooh, yes, that's my kind of girl. She's a wine drinker. You see
well,
where
I'm definitely
go.
A wine drinker.
I just go, yep. You know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, you know, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I will be getting Mad Anatomy because I'd like to read your dark early years. I think that would be
fabulous.
A fascinating read. And I saw a link where I could order that online.
Yep.
So, but I thank you so much. Is there anything that you'd like for people to know? When we're down, you know, we're down to our last 2 minutes. Anything that you'd like anybody?
No.
Is there anything we didn't cover? Put it that way.
No, I think we covered everything. I'm totally appreciative for you having me on here and helping me, you know, get a little bit further outreach into the world. And you know, if anybody wants to contact me or interact with me or dialogue with me, that's what I'm all about. So they can definitely contact me through the website.
Perfect. 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 Well, Kimberly, thank you so much again for your time and your beautiful talent and your brilliant soul because you shine so brightly. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity to get to know you and your work. And I'm telling you, it is absolutely brilliant. So thank you. Thank you so much.
You got it.
For
thank you so much.
Coming on the show tonight. I appreciate you.
I appreciate
All right.
you too.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, this this has been fun. And some of those pictures up on your website, they are for sale, right?
Yes, pretty much. I have prints of everything that I've done.
Yeah, because I'm thinking some of those actually like belong, like are studio worthy, you know. That, you know, like in
yeah.
little boutique-esque, I could see those, you know, pretty much everywhere, you know. So
thank
good
you.
Luck to you, and thank you again, and it's been a great pleasure speaking with you. You have a great Christmas if you celebrate. All right.
As well to you.
Thank you very much. You have a great night and great rest of your week. Thank you so much. I appreciate having you on.
Okay,
all right, take
have
care
a great
now.
Night, Karen.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You too, Kimberly. Take care. Bye-bye. All
okay,
right,
bye-bye.
And that was the incredible author and artist, Kimberly Nichols. Check her out at Kimberly Nichols Studio. There's two S's. KimberlyNicholsStudios.com or studio.com. And next week, my special guest is Lane Michelle from Vera Heart. And we're going to be learning an awful lot about a lot of things that are coming up. So tune in for that. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great night.